Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week three of us read up on a topic and then discuss it from a geeky, nerdy perspective. This week, I'm your host, Hayden Kodish, and we will be discussing Until Dawn and the impact of community on gaming. I'm joined by two people, each of whom have selected a domain that they think connects to our topic and theme this week. They are...
Hello. Hi. My name is Edward Ryan, and this week my domain is Dark Souls.
And I am Laura Kramer, and today I will be discussing God of War, the most recent one.
Oh, I'm so excited. We're going to start by summarizing our topic and domains before we openly discuss. Finally, we close with a competitive rating section to determine who best contributed and whether today's topic is enjoyable. So let's get started. To begin with, let's do a little bit of a summary. For those of you who don't know, Until Dawn is a horror action adventure game. It was made by Supermassive Games and published by SUNY. by Sony Computer. It was a PS4 exclusive, although it was released for PlayStation 3 at some point. But anyway, it is a horror game, and it's set in Western Canada. It centers around a group of 8 teenagers who decide to have a holiday for a night in a cabin in the fictional Blackwood Mountain. Ooh, exactly 1 year after the disappearance of two girls, the twin sisters of a member of the group. Shortly after arriving, the gang finds themselves under attack by a madman and must attempt to survive until sunrise. Throughout the adventure, players alternate between all 8 characters, making critical decisions as the story advances, which drastically affects the game's outcome, leading to hundreds of different scenarios. It actually did have a prequel called The Impatient, which was released sometime earlier this year, but we're not really going to talk about that.
No, we are not.
No, we're not. So basically, you go through the whole game, making these choices, and it was originally designed, actually, as a single-player game. And the reason why I decided to bring it up now is because, as shown in the videos that I shared, and as anyone who's ever played it, what it ended up being was a bit of a party game where groups of people would get together and play the game, either deciding by consensus the choices to be made or by assigning individual roles to the people in the group.
So, just to be clear to anyone who is listening and hasn't played, it is still a single player game. Only one person can play it at a time.
Yes.
But what people were doing, like Keenan described, is handing off the controller or just one person holding it, but they all make decisions together. I just want to make it clear, because you said it was originally designed as a single player game, which might have made it sound like...
it was fully released as a single player game. There's only one controller. But because of the many different characters and the amount of choices that you make, people just independently kind of decided that this would be a better party game than anything else. Kind of reminds me of something that me and you did, Eddie, with Beyond Two Souls. We never finished it, but we started playing it because there's two characters that you kind of control, and me and Eddie ended up just dividing the duties, and that was fun.
But the difference there is that was something they programmed into the game. We could do that with two separate controllers.
Exactly, but Until Dawn was just one controller. You have to pass it around if you're doing this.
It's like the Telltale games.
Yes. It's kind of how some people do that with the Telltale games. But I decided to focus on Until Dawn because Until Dawn got really... I haven't really met anyone with Until Dawn that played it just by themselves, unless they were trying to get one of the outcomes. Unless they really wanted to try to save everyone, they would look up how to save everyone, or they would just simply trial and error until they could find out the way to save all the characters, or they were trying to just get this one cutscene or whatever. I rarely have heard of someone playing just one, playing this game as it was as it was originally intended. Yeah. And this actually ended up becoming a whole thinking like the people who designed it were like, wow, we were really surprised by that, and we actually really like it. And they kind of praised it, and they said that they would try to do more stuff like that.
That's cool. I think it's really fun.
Yeah. Did you?
No,
did
I agree.
I just a quick survey. I don't know. I know you never got a chance to directly play it, Laura. But Eddie, did you ever play it?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and you played it with a group, right?
A group of three, but yes, a group.
That is a group. It's like grapes.
Still counts.
Still counts.
That is a group.
My point has been made. End of podcast. There we go. Done.
All right. Shut it down.
All right. Shut it down, everyone.
It's been real. All right. Bye.
But yeah, so that's why I wanted to bring this up. And like I said, I think that kind of fills up the summary section. Because I think, you know, there's not much more to...
Oh, I'll talk about the videos. I can talk about the videos
later. Yeah, sure. So I shared with the people on this podcast some
the
videos.
Crew.
One was the my minions. I shared one the entire playthrough with.
I did not watch the whole
what?
Thing. I'm so sorry.
So you're just like
it was like
you're
8 hours
deliberately
long.
Trying to sabotage this podcast.
What are you
telling me?
Kenan, just real quick, because I didn't watch it because I've watched the game twice and I've played it once. What playthrough did you send us?
I sent one that was just no commentary, and I'm not sure which one.
Boring.
Yeah, like it's a bit boring, but it's still like you still get to see all like the fucked up moments that make you laugh, like the one time where like the monsters appear. It's actually a bit of an interesting story, guys, because it starts off as it's just like they're under attack by a madman, but then halfway through you find out the madman's actually just the one guy who lost his two sisters, because it turns out the two sisters like disappeared in the woods because the rest of the group played a prank on them, and then they turn into like flesh eating zombies and shit.
But then there's a real madman.
Oh, I missed the
yeah. There's a
zombies.
Real madman, which turns out to be flesh eating zombies.
No. There's a real madman. And because so there's
with a flamethrower, right?
Yeah, there's a fake madman who's Rami Malek. And then he's like, nah, guys, just a prank, bro. But then there's a real madman, and they're like, oh no, there's a real madman. But then it turns out the real madman is actually hunting the Wendigos that live on the mountain, and he's not a madman at all,
i.e., the fleshing zombies.
The Wendigos
he's killed
are bad.
So
yeah.
Quick. Yeah, but my favorite part of the entire game, I just want to say real quick, was when they, like, one of them gets bitten, and, like, one of the guys is like, he's the meathead of the group, he's like, we gotta kill her. And she's like, whoa, you can't kill her, what about this notebook we found with all these notes on, like, the evil things? And the one girl, like, is slipping through the notes, and she finds a note that says, biting is safe. And there's a choice to lie. And say, no, biting is not safe. And I just don't understand that choice at all. But it is
if
hilarious.
If you wanted to kill the other character, that's the choice.
It's great. Yeah, but I sent through that was the whole playthrough. I'm not sure exactly which ending it was, because I watched only, like, half of it when the game first came out. And that kind of sold me. I watched a lot of, like, playthroughs with friends. And the other group I sent was a group playthrough with these people, mainly like the funny moment clips, because
yeah.
I hope the humor was translated.
It was, yeah. And they it was fun because they were all playing as a group, and like one guy screamed really easily, and when he started to shriek at the jump scares, everybody else would shriek really loudly, and then everybody would laugh, and then they'd be like, what the fuck were you yelling for? Like, a door just opened. He was like, I don't know, I was just really scared. It was a fun time. It was a fun time watching it.
Yeah, and that is in part the humor that was played out by playing it, is that because for a lot of it, like I said, like half of it is very campy and almost tongue-in-cheek, because it's supposed to be...
It's like an 80s horror film,
yeah.
But in a game.
That's what it's like.
Yeah, because it's, you know, because the first half is literally a guy... pretending to be a movie serial killer, you know? And just for you folks, just so you know, if you want to watch that video, that is the best of Jesse Cox and the Scary Game Squad. They actually have a bunch of videos, and they're fun to watch. I would recommend them. But yeah, so that's like a taste Laura, of what a lot of people ended up doing, which was just make this this horror game very fun and very entertaining in a humorous way, rather than like, oh man, that was scary kind of way. Right. Because even
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, even when like it gets like really serious, like the when I played it, we still found very humorous moments to laugh at.
And maybe this is something more for like the discussion portion, but I think in regards to like how, you know, the effect that like community has on a game, especially like a single player game, is I think right now the popularity of you know, streaming and of, you know, like full gameplay videos on like YouTube and Twitch, I think really like helps with like creating that kind of atmosphere where it's something like,
yeah,
with this game, like you'd have, you know, any group, like the group that Keenan shared with us, or any other like, you know, group that like does like game stuff online. And this game comes out, it's a horror game, and they're a group of people, so they decide to play it together, you know, as happens a lot of times with these, you know, like things with the, when there's like groups, or like companies, when you have like something like Achievement Hunter, so they'll decide to like stream it together or make the video like together. And then it's with this game specifically, it turns out super great, and it's super fun and very enjoyable to watch. And because it's in that group setting, like as a viewer, you also feel like you're kind of a part of it. So then when you go to play the game yourself, you want to have that same experience and impart that same experience onto your friends. So you say, let's get together and play this game as a group. I think that's a lot of like how it gets started. And then it just, you know, spreads the way anything does.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent point. I hope you will make similar points, if not radically different points.
The same point. Oh, no, I thought it was the same.
Later in the discussion. But with that kind of summing up Until Dawn and the experience of playing Until Dawn as it has been played, rather than what was it necessarily intended to be, let's move on to Domains. Let's start with Mr. Ryan. What do you have to say about Dark Souls? And what is this Soul of Dark? Is that like about 30 feet or what?
Hi, I'm Edward Ryan, and I'm going to talk about Dark Souls. Well, it's not about a foot that is dark. It's like a soul, like S-O-U-L.
Oh, of course. Like our immortal soul.
So like the one, like your spirit or whatever. Yeah. So, y'all know about Dark Souls. And if you don't, that's okay. It doesn't really matter. the reason I brought it today... So real quick version. Dark Souls is a third-person RPG... very combat focused, and notorious for its challenging aspect.
That's a nice way to put it.
So the reason I brought it today, though, is it is largely a single player experience. But there are multiplayer elements built into the game, which I'll talk about briefly. But then a lot of the game's popularity and the way people experience the game is due to the community that cropped up around it. So, real quick to go over the multiplayer aspects of the game. You can just play the game offline, completely single player, not worry about it. But if you are playing Dark Souls and you are connected to the online servers on your Xbox or PlayStation, then stuff can just happen to you. So there's a mechanic.
That's why I'm putting it again. You're very soft with all these ways of explaining Dark Souls.
There is a mechanic for other player for one to invade another player's game.
Oh, shit.
So you could be playing Dark Souls, you know, you're running, you're trying to get to the next bonfire, you're like, oh, I'm running out of, you know, Estus
Blast. That's save points, by the way.
The health potion, which is the health potions of Dark Souls. And you're like, man, these enemies have been real tough, you know? And then you get this, you know, this sound comes across that's kind of like a boom. And then this message flashes up on the bottom of your screen that says, being invaded by, and it'll say, like, the gamer tag of the person invading you. And then they come into your game, and they try to kill you as hard as they can.
Yep. Then you get killed by Sonic Fan 6969.
Yeah, you're being invaded by Colin Ketchin.
True.
And then you try to kill them.
Try is the operative word.
Yeah, so
because really brutal. Anyone of any level.
It is definitely brutal. Now to be fair, there are other aspects to this.
Like you could help them instead.
So there's also so to invade other players, there's a certain like faction in the game that you have to join. But then there's a counter faction will invade people who have invaded other players to reap vengeance on them. So there's a whole thing. But the other big like multiplayer aspect of the game is you can on the ground you can drop your summoning sign, and that will appear in other players' games, and their summoning signs will appear in your game, and you can summon them into your game. And then it becomes like a co-op experience for a short time. Basically until you get to like the next boss fight. Once you beat like the boss of the area, then they're sent back to their game or you're sent back to yours if you were the one who was summoned. So that's super cool in that there's like you can help people or you can, you know, attack people and steal their souls. and steal their humanity and stuff like that. Those are different things in the game. And then the last thing, and one of the things I wanted to talk about, was you can also leave messages on the ground. And those messages will appear in other players' games. These messages are, you can't just type whatever you want. There's like a set of words that you can use to create your messages. It's a very interesting experience. Not so much now because there's not as many people playing. Though Dark Souls Remastered just came out, so there might be a bunch of people playing that. So if you wanted to get this experience, maybe pick up Dark Souls Remastered and try that out if you've never played Dark Souls. It's essentially like people will leave messages that are helpful or nonsensical or that directly try to sabotage you. So in the game so the messages thing turns the game into a like community kind of experience.
Yeah.
And the developers designed it expecting people to use the messages. So
I just wanted to say like, yeah, such inspiring messages like jump, you'll be fine. You're not fine.
That's the thing though, is so there are some areas in the game where if you like drop off a cliff, you'll land on a ledge below and that'll lead you to like some good loot. Now, how do you find out about this the first time? How did the first person find out about this? They probably fell off that cliff and landed on that area. So then the idea, and this did end up working out. The idea is that then they'd go back up there and leave a message that says, try jumping, you know?
But,
So then as this started to happen and people realized like, oh, like, you know, that, you know, this message here is right. I should try jumping. Other people, as many people are wont to do, would just put that message on cliffs where you would die if you jumped off of it. They'd say, try jumping. and then if you did, you would die. And it's super funny. So, in some sections of the game, there are, like, illusory walls, which, most of the time, there's nothing letting you know that there's one there. How you find out that there's one there is you hit the wall and it disappears. You know, it's same kind of thing, is someone would hit that wall at some point while fighting an enemy or something, or just going around checking for illusory walls, and then they'd leave a message. And this community kind of spread, like, online as well, And then the other big thing, and maybe I'll talk about this more in the discussion, is the story and the lore of Dark Souls is very vague. And spread across, like, you know, the story of one character will be spread across, like, a whole bunch of different, like, item descriptions and spell descriptions and locations. And stuff like that. And different locations and, like, textures in the map and stuff
like
that.
Like, who is it?
So it's very vague. And one second, because you said I'm running out of time. And so what people did was, outside of the game, you know, on, like, the internet and forums and on YouTube and stuff like that, they came together as a community to try and piece this story together, figure out what's going on in this game that we've really enjoyed. So that's Dark Souls and how the community affected the game.
All right, so that was great. We got to hear from Eddie and his, you know, his Dark Soul. So now we will take the turns. We give the reins over to Miss Kramer. Miss Kramer, what do you have on the plate for us today?
We had a teacher named Miss Kramer, but it wasn't Laura.
Yeah, she got upset because I was late to school, late to class because of a stabbing. That was annoying.
I taught reading for a little while, and there was a kid who was, like, I don't know, 5 or 6, and she called me Miss Crayons, and it was the cutest thing in the world. So.
Aww.
That is cute, and honestly, you should change your name.
Yeah, I know. Crayons. I probably should. Anyway, I am talking about God of War, which is a little bit of a weird choice because I think I've had a much more enriching experience in a community game playing some of the Telltale games like The Walking Dead. Charles and I really played that kind of as a couple, even though only one of us was playing with the controller. But I wanted to talk about God of War because it was a little bit more recent in my memory, and a little bit of a different perspective, I think. So God of War, I'm talking about the most recent one that came out on April 20th of 2018.
Sorry, I was mishearing you. I thought you said God of War. You meant Dad of War.
I need to get that game.
Dad of
that,
War. Yes, I did mean that. Yes. It's real good. So it's the eighth game in the God of War series developed.
Really?
It's number 8 chronologically, yeah. And I think some of them are not like the major games. Like some of them are like text games or text
based games. I thought
there
was like only 4. I was Jesus.
Yeah, I thought so too. I looked up like God of War 3 for some reason when I was first looking up the details. And I was like, this is not what I'm looking for.
No, it's the 4th.
3 was the 5th.
Yeah.
It's the 4th like major platform game, right?
It's the 4th one that's telling like a major portion of Kratos' story.
Gotcha.
Right.
Like the other ones are like, you know, like prequels and stuff like that.
One of them is actually about Atreus.
Boy.
Who is kind of a main character in this game. So it gives a little backstory on him.
Boy.
Anyway, it was received with like huge, great acclaim. People really loved it for all of the reasons. The narrative, the visuals, the gameplay, the mechanics.
The beard.
The beard was great. And it's a little bit different from the other games. So basically all the other games were based around this kind of Greek mythology, because Kratos is the god of war in the Greek realm, and he fights all of the Greek gods to become the god of war. But this one is actually based in Norse mythology instead, which was a little surprising to me at first, but I think they did a really great job kind of spanning the worlds. And the creators of the game really talked about this being like the reset button on the whole franchise. Like, this is kind of the new start. So even though it's following the same character, they're really giving new life to the game. So the double chains were the huge weapon in the other games. That was like what defined him. Yeah, that was the iconic weapon of the games previously, where they don't show up until very late in the game this time. He's using a battle axe instead, which does some cool things, like is able to freeze things and it can return to you. So it's pretty cool. Some of the other different mechanics are that Atreus is actually a support character. And I have never watched a game where the support character did as much. Usually they just kind of wander around. They're kind of pointless. But Atreus actually levels up really interestingly and does a lot of great things that, like, genuinely you would not be able to beat the game if you didn't pay attention to him.
Boy.
So that was really cool. The story seems a little bit more fleshed out than in previous games, where before it was more like I'm going to defeat all these cool-looking monsters. This one is actually pretty an emotional story about Kratos, whose wife has died, and her last wish is to have her ashes
scattered,
sprinkled. What is the word that I'm looking for
you're
here? Scattered. Thank you.
You're not preparing a pastry. You're spreading a loved one's earthly remains.
Kratos is Emeril Lagasse.
Bam! Laid to rest. Don't you know? All right.
Oh, shit. She wanted her ashes spread on the highest peak of the Nine Realms. And so Kratos and his semi-estranged son,
boy,
like they don't have a good relationship, set out on this journey to get to the highest peak. And of course, all sorts of things happen on their journey. They meet lots of enemies and some really interesting friends. Turns out that the peak that they thought was the highest is not what they were expecting. And that's part of kind of the gameplay as well, where you're going through these nine realms. And it's just like a really crazy mix of the previous fighting game, but the narrative. And they just did a really great job. It also just looks beautiful. And there are also some really fun puzzles. And, you know, you try to get at your chests, you know, opening the chests, but you have to, like, find and hit things to find out where the location is or open something else. And so with everything combined, I think that the intricacies of the story get you really invested in it, even if you're just watching instead of playing. And then you're really invested in the characters, but you're also really invested in the person that's playing. And so you're like trying to help them out to solve the puzzles, and you're like, oh, look, you got a hit over there. And they're like, oh my gosh, thanks. And then you're like, oh, watch out, this guy's coming up from behind you, because the fighting gets really intense. And, you know, having a second set of eyes is really sometimes helpful. And so it really turns into a fun game to kind of watch and cheer on. And my best friend and I were actually watching Charles play, and we thought we were going to go, like, hang out and do girl stuff. And then we ended up just sitting there for, like, 2 hours being like, all right, hit him in the face now. Nice. Like, oh, he's ready. He's down. Like, you know, we were really playing together as a couch experience. And I just thought it was really fun. So that is why I'm talking about God of War, and have lots of things to say about it in the discussion as well.
So, I was wondering, guys, do you think that a community's involvement in a game kind of transcends its original purpose? And do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah. I mean, especially with games like Until Dawn and some of the Telltale games, I think that the community involvement really does change what the game is kind of supposed to be. And I think that's a great thing. I think that whenever people can kind of come together around something, even if it's changing the original meaning of it, as long as people are getting enjoyment and getting more out of the experience than they would have otherwise, I think it's fantastic. Like, I am never going to play Until Dawn because I don't like jump scares and I don't do well with horror. Generally speaking, I am getting better, but it is a slow progress. But
same, fam.
Being able to watch that second video, not the original playthrough, but the second video of the guys playing through, especially the funnier moments. Like, I had a great time watching that video, and I never would have done that if it was just a regular horror one-person game. And that's because, you know, like, horror movies are better when you're watching together, so you can share that fear and be able to kind of laugh about it. Like, if you're by yourself watching a horror movie, you're probably not going to laugh right after you jump because there's nobody there to start laughing with you.
I never thought of it as sharing fear, but I like that idea of sharing fear. I'm pretty sure that's what every serial killer has really just been trying to do.
Yeah, I think that's a really
I'm really just a comedian, guys. I don't like to think of myself as a killer.
Killer in the comedy realm.
I think, Laura, I think that was a really good point. That we didn't touch on in the summary, that it being a horror game specifically, positioned it uniquely to kind of fill that space.
Yeah, and it's much more fun to, like, start laughing at your friend who just yelled a lot than it is to sit there and just be scared on your own, you know? And, like, that creates such a bond between people that I think it just really does elevate it to a new level.
When you can berate a friend.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and I think if I could relate that actually over to Dark Souls, some of that with horror is it's wanting to share, you know, that with other people. Like, you know, you went through it and maybe you got surprised by the jump scare or whatever, but now you want to see your friends react to it and you want to react to it with them. And I think that's part of why, like, something like Dark Souls, part of why people share that game with their friends is it's tough game. It's challenging. And there are a lot of parts of the game where it basically says, like, oh, you think it's going well, huh? Yeah, it's going pretty good. No! And it, like, smacks you and kills you in a big surprise that you could not have seen coming if you didn't know about it ahead of time. And that's, you know, that's something that I think a lot of people have fun, like, sharing with, like, their friends when they make their friends play through a game like that for the first time.
In the horror genre, it's fun to kind of have that experience with your friends. And I think that in God of War and in a lot of games these days where the narrative becomes much more important and the story becomes really engaging and games start to become more of an entertainment, like a higher, like, watching entertainment value, God of War is just a really good story. And so when you have a really good story, you want to share that with your friends too. And to be able to sit there and watch through, it is almost like a movie, but then you're controlling it, or, you know, your friend is controlling it. And so there are there's a whole nother level there of the investment that you have in the story and the person playing. And I think that the better games get and the more narratively interesting they become, wider range of games that people are going to want to have this community around is going to grow. And I think that's really cool.
That's cool. I was just going to say that. So you're saying that through the narrative, because the narrative was so engaging that the game actually ended up, unlike Until Dawn, which people kind of used as like a switch off, of which multiple people would be playing the same game, God of War ended up becoming almost a spectator game where it was just as entertaining for those watching than it was for those playing because of how strong the narrative and characterization was.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, also some of it was the game mechanics itself of, like, watching you control the axe that you can freeze. You're like, oh, shit, go freeze that thing. And that was really fun. But I think that it was just a really strong story. It's like The Last of Us. The Last of Us was unbelievably emotional to watch. And, like, I never played that game, but I really love that game because I watched the first, like, hour of it. And that was it. Like, that's all it took for me to be in love with this game because it was so emotionally driven.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah. So with the point about, like, you know, viewing God of War as if it's like a movie, I think that's something really interesting about games, specifically, you know, games like Until Dawn, though, where it's kind of like a playable movie, is when you're, you know, a lot of people, I think, when they're watching like a movie with, you know, their friends, especially if it's like a horror movie or an action movie, you know, they'll be like, oh, get him, get that guy, shoot him or whatever, you know?
It definitely gives a sense of agency.
But then when it's one of you in the room controlling the character in the movie, you can make them do that thing, which is, I think, is super interesting experience. Or you can, if you're the one with the controller, you can specifically not do the thing that the people in the room are wanting you to do, you know, thus making it more like a film. No, I think the idea of games as, like, interactive, like, films, because that's what, you know, a lot of games are, not all games, some games are like 100% wholesale about the gameplay, but a lot of games are interactive stories, which I think is super cool. And then when you have something like Until Dawn or like Dark Souls or like your experience with God of War, it's more so than just an interactive story.
Same. Like Twitch plays Pokemon. Why didn't I talk about that? Jesus.
There you go. Do you think that...
I like video games.
We did. So I wanted to ask you guys, is that, do you think, like, because Until Dawn was designed as a single-player game, do you think... it was designed to be something else, so do you think that the community changing it kind of deters from the artist's original vision? I don't think so either, because I was just going to say that, like, I think that it doesn't because their design was to entertain. So, they kind of, like, succeeded.
And then answered.
Anyway, who is the best? Me. No, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like any...
I like how Keenan asked a question and then immediately answered his own question.
No, I was just wondering if you guys felt the same thing about...
I like that style of
that,
because
I know some people don't. I know some people are like,
where
purists.
He's just like,
like,
I know
can't
you guys aren't
going to
get the
it.
Answer right, so I'll just do it myself.
Well, what's funny is that I am like totally a purist about a lot of things, but I think that it is true that once you put a work into the world, like it is no longer... your own thing. Like, people are going to interpret books or movies or TV or imagery however they're going to interpret it, and it's going to have different meaning for everybody depending on what their perspective is. And so once you've released it into the world, it's bound to change. It's bound to be its own entity now. And I think part of what's great about the community-based things is that it's really fun to mess around with those boundaries and figure out, you know, what the ins and the outs are. And if you have a lot of people doing it that are just as passionate about the game as you are, then it certainly doesn't hurt to have that change, you know?
Oh, that's a nice point.
I think
point.
That
you know.
The other thing about it is you can still play the game as intended. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. So if you want to play it in this new way that a lot of people have decided is more fun, then you can. And if you want to play it in the intended way where it's just you playing it, then you also can, which I think is super great.
Do you think, guys, it could...
I keep saying super.
We talked about how a large aspect of it was the fact that it was a horror. Do you think that if it wasn't a horror game, do you think that it could have... that, like, say it was more of an adventure game, like God of War... do you think the aspect of the community trade-off would still be there?
If I could jump onto that one first, I'll do a quick answer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I think that similar things have cropped up with a lot of the Telltale games. I think a lot of people have played them in similar ways to how they played Until Dawn. And they are fairly popular games. I think the, you know, group... playthroughs of them are also a fairly popular idea, but I think specifically the way that Until Dawn was designed, you know, to be like an 80s horror movie, I think that is what helped to, like, elevate it and have it go, like, as viral as it did. So I think it... I think if it were a different type of game, then you still would have had...
It reminds me a lot of the Oni Plays videos. And there's one that somebody shared with me where they're playing a Lord of the Rings game. And it is... it's not, obviously, the Lord of the Rings game isn't a horror movie, but it is the funniest video ever. Because they're like, Sam, kill Frodo. And they have Sam kill Frodo. Or, like, you know, put on the ring. Or, like, all these things. And it is hilarious because... they're doing all these things that you're not supposed to do. Like, if you're a purist, you're like, oh, horrified that Sam is trying to put on the ring or murdering Frodo or eating Frodo's flesh is something that they tried doing.
What, like, the fuck?
And I think it's like a text walkthrough of Lord of the Rings where it's like you can say, like, walk outdoor or whatever, or go east.
What game is this?
I don't know.
Sorry.
It's a Lord of the Rings game. I'll send you guys the video. It's fucking hilarious.
That sounds insane. Yeah.
But... It's so funny. But it's a little harder to kind of get a huge community around because
those are
like the options are so wide because it's a text-based game that you kind of have to have a fewer number of people to kind of make those decisions to make it feel anything like cohesive at all. But I think it is possible to do in other games. I just think that also watching your friends freak the fuck out when you're playing a horror game is just funnier in a group setting. So I think that's what
really
makes it.
I agree, because there was actually the developer, Supermassive Games, actually, along with Sony again, published another game last year, and it was called Hidden Agenda, where they kind of took what they learned, and they talked about it. They took what they learned from Until Dawn, and applied it to this game, Hidden Agenda, which is about you take control. It's an action adventure game played from a third person perspective. You control a detective and, like, the district attorney, and you try to stop a serial killer. And it has the same thing: quick time events, story decisions, that kind of stuff. However, what they included was using the PlayLink feature. They allowed others to, using their smartphones, to vote for a decision to be made. And what they would also allowed like the whole group to be able to like vote on decisions. And then they also included like a competitive mode in which each person playing would be given a secret objective, like get them to do this or get this person to do that or figure out this piece of information, which is why it's called Hidden Agenda, which, you know, you'd get points for getting, succeeding, and it was designed to, like, create conflict and stuff. It was not received as well.
Yeah, it's,
as Until Dawn.
Well, the whole Playlink series of games are not dissimilar to the Jackbox Party Pack games. And so I think from what I've heard, they're very fun.
It did.
But I think a lot of people didn't buy into them.
But like you said, even like besides just like mechanics, it was just something that was like okay. Which I don't think is necessarily a fault on the idea, but perhaps just the execution.
I was about to say, I think something that's really important for all of these, when you really get a community behind a game, it's usually because it's very high quality in whatever they were working towards, like the visuals or the story.
Oh my god, low quality.
Or very low quality.
But I just think that's...
You guys remember Quap?
I don't know what you were talking about.
Quap, Q-W-O-P, and no. Quap.
I just... Oh, wait. Is this the...
The keyboard running guy?
Yeah, I remember
that
game. That was crazy. But I do think that it was interesting though that Supermassive like made a game and then the community took it and did their own thing, so much so that Supermassive said, you know what, we're gonna make a game that's tailored to that community.
I'm very interested to see how that goes, because I think part of the fun is to mess around with something that isn't supposed to work that way. So I think they have to be they have to really be delicate about how much control they can kind of give to other people, I guess. I'm interested to see what mechanics they use, I guess, is really the thing.
I see. That makes sense. I see. So you think that that the original intention does make a certain impact on it, not because, like, the intent of, like, the original design as, like, you kind of like the power trip of being able to say, like, oh, well, you know, it was designed this way, but I made it do this.
Well, that, and also, like, if you're in a group of friends and you're sitting there and you have a countdown going to make a decision, like, it increases the tension so much if you have two people yelling at you to do one thing and one person yelling at you to do the other, and you want to maybe do a third thing. If there's a mechanic in the game that allows other people to make those decisions, it may not end up being as much fun, because you can kind of really argue your point, and then ultimately the person who's playing the game can make that final decision. And in a game like Until Dawn, where every decision has a consequence, that can change things dramatically. Like, I remember the video we watched of the group playing through. There was a dog that came out, or a wolf that came out of nowhere and really surprised them. And one of the options was to, I think it was like hit the wolf or punch the wolf or something like that. And everyone was like, punch the wolf. Because, like, in so many games, like, having a wolf there is a dangerous thing. And the guy didn't punch the wolf, and then it became his, like, ally. And if you had a game mechanic, if you had a game mechanic where those other people could vote towards it or something, then he would have maybe punched the wolf and killed it, and it would have had a totally different consequence. So
yeah, your wolf buddy.
I think that I don't think that they're going to do a bad job by any means. I'm just very interested in seeing how they choose to do that.
That's a thing they're going to keep pursuing. That would be very interesting to see. Well, that just about wraps up our little bit of our discussion. Going to move on now to the great and powerful rating section. Yeah, I just want to say thank you for such a thrilling discussion. I hope you both felt that you had agency and were able to choose your character to do what you want. But let's move on to the ratings. We will have both of our representatives rate the topic on a scale of 1 to 5 Wendigos. Oh, that's right, scary Wendigos. How many scary Wendigos would you give this, Eddie, Until Dawn?
Well, Keenan, Until Dawn, I liked it a lot. Are we rating the game?
If you want to average it, or if you want to just factor them both into one rating.
So you want me to average my two ratings then?
Sure.
That's how averaging works. So, well, the game itself, while I enjoyed it a whole lot, it does not hold as much replay value as I would like. You don't have as much control over things as the game would like you to believe. Which, the first time you play through the game, it feels like you have a lot, and it's super intense. So the first playthrough of Until Dawn is fantastic. But then when you play it again, it's like, oh,
10 seconds, spoilers,
this thing
go.
I can't stop. Or this thing I can't make happen. Like, for example, spoilers for Until Dawn real quick.
Yes.
It'll be like 10 seconds.
Interesting.
The character Mike, he cannot die until the last chapter of the game, no matter what you do. That's the end of the spoilers, everybody. But yeah, so that, no matter what you do, what decisions you make, that won't happen before that point in the game. So the game itself, I'm going to give a 3.
All right.
But the community experience playing the game is wonderful. It's
very lovely.
Eddie, I like it. I'm gonna give that a 4. So
altogether,
3.5.
Okay. That was his twist.
Damn! What a twist, like the game.
But I don't like to give half ratings, so I'm giving it a 4.
Laura?
Boom.
That's so funny. I feel like you were kind of reading my mind a little bit, except for not the same reasons, which is strange. But I would probably give the game a 3, partly just because I didn't play it, so my experience has only been watching it, and I feel like the video showed like it was very well. It looked like it was really beautifully done, really well thought out. It looked like it was very complicated and well made, so definitely want to give props for that. Not a huge horror fan, so that docks it a little bit. But the community experience also does seem really great, and I was going to give that a 4. So to average out, that gives it a 3.5. And I do give part numbers. So
wow.
I'm gonna give it
really
a 3.5 Wendigos. You know, that one really got hacked in half, so.
All right.
3.5.
Good, I'm glad you guys in some ways kind of enjoyed it.
You did great, Laura.
Or not at all. Or really a lot. Who knows? Who knows, though, if you're just fake. Anyway, now I will give the most anticipated...
well, we did just rate it.
I will now award the most... I will now give a goddamn gold star to a gold star student. you will be giving a reward to the person I thought contributed most of this episode, who really factored in all the things and made the most points. Besides me, because if not, I would be receiving the golden Rami Malek. Yes, golden Rami Malek. Right.
I'll
yes.
Take that.
Besides you.
For those of you who don't know, he played one of the more major, if not the most major character in Until Dawn.
Mr. Robot
Mike.
Himself.
Although, in the defense of Mike, like, it would be really weird. No, what I'm saying is, in the defense of, like, making Mike immortal, it would be really funny if you could, while it would be very humorous, if you could lose all your characters and everyone die before you find out anything about the game, it would be a little disappointing if, like... you just like, oh, I guess they're all dead. Well, I guess that's the game. I wonder what.
That'd be awesome. That'd be hardcore.
Start from the very beginning. Yeah, but like, as like, what I mean is, because the other ones you can keep going,
over,
and that's
try
a little bit more
again,
interesting.
Kid.
But I've actually never gotten.
Is that not acceptable?
No, but any the point is of the
decades?
Game is to have a certain level of continuity in the game. Like you keep going. If you just lost everyone, you would just have to restart. And where would you restart from? The most recent character's death? Anyway, in the defense of that, no.
Dude. Real quick though,
no, but there are no. There are some dumb decisions that like are very clearly designed
row,
to like
to
just have you get that character killed.
It's not like it's
like
not
some
like
of like the run and stay decisions where it's like, well, how was I supposed
to
know
each of them?
I want to say it's like Mark or some shit. Was it Chris?
Oh yeah, like
it was Chris. Matt.
What's the football player's name?
Nick? Yeah, I have yet to actually play.
Chris is the nerd. Chris is the nerd.
Well, Matt, some of the decisions are really stupid because it's literally left or right in a cave system.
Most people, I think,
and you know nothing about the cave system. But if you go left, I've had my characters killed, and if I go right, they live. It's like sometimes, yeah, like it's literally a left or. I don't know if it was Ashley.
Oh, are you talking about Ashley? No, because with that's based on a decision that you made earlier in the game. Yeah, so if you make a certain decision, like a couple decisions earlier, then it's like going one way kills you and going the other way doesn't kill you. But if you made a different decision earlier, going either way gives you a quick time event where you can...
Yeah, but anyway, the point is, the golden Rami Malek.
Anyway.
Beautiful, beautiful man that he is. I will award to one of you now. So the one that will be...
Vague.
Right? Yeah, took a turn for the worst.
We took a turn there.
Yeah, we went left. Crap. The right. No, we can't. We have to restart the entire podcast
let's go back.
Now.
I forgot we were doing the ratings.
No, we don't do that.
We
this
went
is
left.
Now Dark Souls. You can't just reload the last save. You lose everything or you... Exactly, but then
we can just reload the last.
All right,
okay.
The winner.
I really
of
need
the
us to know who won
Rami
the
Malek.
Golden Rami Malek now.
He's Eddie Ryan.
Hey.
I need to have it now.
I just want to say.
Listen, I just think that I would have won it if we didn't have go on a 30-minute conversation about the gameplay because I've never played it and I can't participate.
Oh, well,
so I think that's a recency bias.
Get it? We're Golden Rami Malek. You will be lucky if you get a golden hated Peneteer. Okay.
Well, we can't go back unless we reload from our last save.
Now, here's
depending
here's
on her
thing,
choices.
Okay? In the spirit
of I appreciate
Until
that.
Dawn, I will saw Rami Malek in half.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. And I'll give the lower half to Laura. Yeah, depending on your choices with Chris. Exactly. So, I'd like to just say, wow, it's an honor to be here. You know, when I was a child and growing up in Kansas, I went to the big video game premieres, just like everybody else, and, you know, I would watch TV and I'd see those...
Or his real face, or a real actor's face, you know, whichever one you want to choose.
Wow,
reference.
One day I'm going to win an award.
Well, that's an important question. Are you getting a real-life gold Rami Malek, or are you getting, like, a... recreation of his character in the video game. How true to Rami Malek is this Rami Malek?
You don't know, it's a small one, but it's like a bust. It's close. I imagined like a little bit of a bust.
That's true. Is this a full-size Rami Malek?
Like his little head for your mantelpiece. I'm like, oh, that's Rami Malek.
Okay, I was thinking it looked like an Oscar, but it was Rami Malek instead of the Oscar. So that's my acceptance speech, incoherent as I could make it. Bam. Rest in peace.
Sprinkle them ashes.
That about wraps it up. Thank you for listening to the Common Geeking Program. I'm your host, Keenan Kodish, and you can find me wherever Keenan Kodishes are sold. Again, I've been joined by...
I'm Edward Ryan, and you can find me up on a mountain with 7 other teens trying to survive an evil killer.
And I am Laura Kramer, and you will find me not there, because no... That's it.
Also on twitter.com at Fake Eddie Ryan.
Fake Eddie Ryan, genius. Next week, our episode will actually be hosted by the Fake Eddie Ryan.
That's true.
Be talking about, Mr. Ryan?
Oh, shit. So, Laura, remember how I said we read that on the last episode? We didn't. We read it on the next episode. We just recorded
so
it.
So, meta. That's perfect in the spirit of your...
Hello, I'm Edward Ryan, and I'll be hosting the next episode of the Common Geeking Program.
Nice.
That episode will be on the film Deadpool. We're going to talk about that.
Hilarious. Be sure to tune in next Friday, which is the 22nd of June, and follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Geeking Program. Any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us, or tweeting, hashtag CGP, will enter you into a raffle where you get to pick the topic for a future episode. And if you add a hashtag Keenan is our God, I will personally bless you. Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a critical help for growing our show, and we'll read new reviews on the air. Anyways, thank you for listening, subscribing, sharing everything, and we'll talk to you next week.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Keenan Kodish, joined by Eddie Ryan and Laura Kramer. This episode is sponsored by Kratos saying the word boy.
Boy!
Because we all need Dad Kratos in our lives.
This is true as well.
The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Taimul Chaudhary, and original music by Colin Ketchin. Next week, we'll be talking about Deadpool. So be sure to read up on that. And thank you for listening to this podcast. Ciao.
All right. So let's begin without further ado.
Actually, just a little bit more ado.
You're right. Was that enough ado?
That was too some ado about nothing.
But not too much ado about nothing. keep that on the recording if you can.
Oh, Jesus.
All right.